Making Chicken Salad this week is brought to you by Three Count Pro Wrestling Academy. Are you in Brisbane and thought about learning to be a wrestler? Well, here's your chance. Three Count Pro Wrestling Academy are based out of Beenleigh in Queensland, and they're committed to teaching the best, safest way to learn the art of professional wrestling. Hit up their Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or email admin@threecountfitness.com now to register your interest, and we thank them so much for supporting the show.
Here I was blaming AEW for feeding you chicken shit, knowing you mindless millennials would be eating it up as if it were chicken salad, when it's really been your fault all along.
Make chicken salad out of chicken shit. People is as people does, that's all there is to it. Put a square peg in a round hole, just never seems to fit. And you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Hello and welcome to Making Chicken Salad, the Wrestle Radio Australia podcast, where we talk about everything going on in the world of international wrestling. I am the main host's younger brother, because I don't know where he is, Lachlan Albert, and I'm joined, as always, by the man who really should have been mentioned in Undertaker's Hall of Fame induction, Todd Eastman. Todd, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. It's funny you mention it, because I was looking for the host earlier today. And I couldn't find him. I couldn't find him anywhere.
That's not me. Look, I've taken over his Twitter account, but so look, it has been a huge few days of wrestling, big WrestleMania weekend. So we are going to get stuck in and talk about all the results, starting, I guess, in chronological order with NXT Stand and Deliver. So I'll do the results bottom to top, and then we'll talk about it. So we've got new NXT Women's Tag Team Champions with Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai defeating Toxic Attraction. After that, the NXT North American Championship was on the line in a ladder match. Carmelo Grimes, Grayson Waller, Santos Escobar, and Solo Sikoa could not defeat Cameron Grimes, the new NXT North American Champion. Tommaso Ciampa was defeated by Tony D'Angelo, and Triple H came out to give Ciampa a bit of a send-off by the looks of things. The new NXT Tag Team Champions are MSK. I keep going to say Imperium there. Don't know why that is. MSK beat Imperium and the Creed Brothers in the triple threat match for those titles. We've got still NXT Women's Champion Mandy Rose beating Cora Jade, Io Shirai, Kaylee Ray in a four-way. LA Knight going down to Gunther, and the NXT Championship retained by Dolph Ziggler over Bron Breakker. Todd, what of this stood out to you?
Well, you and I both talked about this off mic. Sort of shocked that they did the whole Bron Breakker thing, considering they sort of did it 2 days. We'll probably talk about it on Sunday, but yeah, we'll talk about it a bit now. We did it on. They did the rematch on Raw, and Bron Breakker, of course, won that match and was the NXT champion now. So I don't know why they wouldn't have done it the couple of days before, but yeah, that stood out as a bit of a shock.
It feels weird to have the NXT title change hands not on an NXT program.
Yeah, one thing that did, like watching that triple threat match, the tag triple threat match, you really saw how out of their depth the Creed Brothers are still.
They're super green.
Yeah, they've still got a lot of work to do when it comes to that. Grayson Waller with an insane bump.
Oh, going, just taking his arm straight through a ladder. So
yeah,
the highlight of the show for me was definitely that ladder match. Grayson, it just kind of went ridiculous, as you're expecting a huge ladder match to do. Grayson Waller on the outside took a big diving elbow from the top of a ladder onto another ladder. The person on the other ladder moved, and he just like rebounded off the steel. It was pretty gross.
Yeah. I messaged him the next day. He's a bit banged up, but he's okay. So, and I think he had his arm in a sling for Mania. So I don't know if that was just selling it or what the deal was, but he reckons he's okay. Just, yeah, a bit banged up from it.
Yeah, definitely. Just worth noting that we talked about the Creed Brothers being out of their depths. I just decided to Google it. According to Cage Match, they have had 16 matches, including that title match.
Well, so I mean, if you're in AEW, you can have three in a title match. It doesn't really mean much.
Sure, but most of the people in AEW have had careers before they get into that.
Like, okay, fair enough.
The Creed Brothers, yeah, I know, weird. So Yep, let's just confirm that. Sorry, Julius has had 17 because he had a singles match as well. So that's their grand, including dark matches and everything. Like, that's the total number of matches they've had, which is insane to be on, you know, international wrestling television in a title match at a huge event, when you've had those, that small number of matches. So credit to them for being that good, that green, but they're pretty green.
What for you stood out? Because you asked me, so.
Yeah, look, other than
the ladder match. Aside from the match, yeah.
I really wish that the NXT women's title would have more of a storyline at the moment, because I thought that match, other than obviously Cora Jade's very green, that match was really good as far as the individual workers in it. And then we're just not seeing any of that storytelling come through, which is what I tend to really like about NXT, right? You look at the Tony D'Angelo Tommaso Ciampa match. I'm not going to be hollering from the rooftops about how much I love Tony D'Angelo, but it felt like this was Tommaso Ciampa trying to keep relevant in NXT and being held down by a newer, younger guy who was willing to do whatever it took to be on top. It felt like there was a story there. It felt like it was important. And the women's title match, to me, didn't feel that.
Do you know what? They sort of, in my mind, they sort of mucked it up where they could have had Mandy Rose and Cora Jade just on their own, just because that was a storyline that was going on. Because they did a bit a while ago, because I know you don't really watch the NXT shows.
But yeah, falling off them.
Yeah, they'd left, the Toxic Attraction had left all their titles just hanging around. So Cora Jade stole them. And then she set up like booby traps for the different ones to fall into, like both the tag girls. And the first tag girl, she put it like over a bin. So she went into the bin and then Cora Jade pushed her in and then put like the lid of the bin on, then a forklift on top of the bin so she couldn't get out. And sort of did the same thing to the second one. So then it was left with just her and Mandy. So she corners her and Mandy, but then Mandy gets on top of her. And at the end of it, the two girls just appeared out of nowhere. So they weren't really trapped still. I was like, well, what was the point of doing that?
So the way that that match got set up as well was Kaylee Ray and Io Shirai winning the Women's Dusty Cup as a tag team and then inserting themselves into the match, which was originally Mandy Rose and Cora Jade. So it feels like maybe what we're building towards is Cora taking the title off Mandy in a one-on-one without having everyone else involved.
Well, maybe they saw how green Cora is and thought, hello, we better throw another couple of people in this to try and ungreen it. One thing I will say that I did enjoy is that they made the arena look like the NXT arena. There was no the black barricades. It was that see-through Perspex barricades that NXT have, which I thought was a nice touch because it was something I actually noticed and went, oh, they've actually done it. So it looks like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Visually, NXT 2.0 is so bright that having that brightness in another place makes it immediately look like NXT 2.0, which is, you know, credit to them for that. Look, other than that, LA Knight just feels like a main roster guy. Him and Gunther, you know.
I'll tell you what, how good a shape is Gunther in now?
Oh, it's
insane. Like, I noticed it a couple of weeks before, but you really notice it when someone gets into a match that goes for more than 5 minutes. And they start like the body weight sort of, because over a course of time, your body weight drops in a match because you're losing water weight because you're sweating. And I was like, the dude has abs now. I never would have thought I would have seen Walter with abs.
Yeah. The one like possible criticism that I have of that is I feel like maybe he doesn't look as different from everyone as he used to. He used to be, you know, when you would see Walter walk in, he was just this presence. Whereas now he kind of looks like another WWE wrestler. And that's, look, maybe that's just a personal thing for me. You know, I like seeing some vastly different body shapes in my wrestling. But yeah, like credit to him, the workout regime, you got to get to look like that when you're a man his size is insane. So
I roll. it wasn't bad. It wasn't an NXT takeover show.
No, that
we're used to in the past, and that's something that, as fans, we're sort of going to have to just let go, because that time has passed. Because they're not going to have the polished guys on that they used to have. These are developmental guys, by and large. I mean, let's face it, even though Mandy Rose has been working for years, she is still developmental. So yep,
definitely. And, you know, I think having her come back, I think she's a great fit for what they're doing now, in that she's fulfilling that Dolph Ziggler role of coming in and being the experienced champion, while it's also benefiting her, because I think that she really does benefit from being in somewhere that she can continue to grow, because on the main roster, I don't think she was ready for her spot. I think she did a great job, you know, working to be in that spot, but she wasn't prepared for it when they put her there. And so giving her more time to grow, I think, is a great thing.
But I'd be very interested to see if NXT changes any bit, any more, now that sort of Triple H seems to be back around it a bit more. That's what it looks like. I don't know if that's true or not.
But. So stories that I'm hearing coming out of wrestling media, Todd, suggest that a lot of the changes are directly to do with AEW. The idea is that if AEW is going to absorb the kind of independent talent that NXT was originally taking on, they're not going to be able to maintain the brand that they did have, which is, you know, something very true. Because the NXT brand was picking up the Samoa Joes and the Adam Coles and the Finn Balors and the, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura's of the world. And those people are going to AEW now. And so if that can't continue to be a viable source of new talent for NXT, then that makes sense why they're going that more developmental route, getting the athletes out of colleges and training them to be wrestlers. Like, again, you know, I just mentioned with the Creed brothers, how few matches they have actually had in their career. You know what I mean? It's very similar for Bron Breakker. Let me bring up Bron Breakker right now. He is, you know, now a multiple-time NXT champion. He has had a grand total of 24 in-ring appearances in front of people.
Jeez.
24. Right? Like seriously, 24 matches. There are guys who, you know, locally wrestle more than that every year. And Bron Breakker's the NXT champion. And that's his entire career. So I think it does go to show that they are looking for something radically different, and that may or may not be Triple H's influence there.
It'd be interesting to see what it is going forward. Because I know that, and I sent you the article this week, that they'd had a big meeting. Apparently it was the WWE as well, like a whole, it was a whole talent-wide meeting, because they're only there for WrestleMania. And Triple H had a speech in that and introduced Nick Khan. And now Nick Khan, apparently they're lifting their ban on the third-party deals, so the Twitches, the Cameos, but apparently they have to give some sort of a cut to WWE. I don't know how much it is or what the percentage is or anything like that, but at least they've backed off now on the whole you can't have Twitches, you can't have, because I know for guys like AJ, that was a big source of his income was Twitch, and I think Adam Cole as well. So
yeah, to speak to that, the quote from this PW Mania source is, Khan reportedly provided key business updates to the roster and announced that talent will now make additional money/profit participation on top of their superstar contracts for revenue generated from third-party platforms. This includes cameo, autograph signings, scripted and unscripted programming. So the bit that jumps out to me there is not only, you know, the cameo and that sort of thing, but talking about scripted and unscripted programming, that's WWE Network shows, right? So to me, that suggests that if you're doing an episode of, let's say, Ride Along, where now you're being on and you're on camera when driving from one city to another, you're getting paid for that rather than that being the expectation because you're working for WWE, which, you know, can only be seen as a good thing. People should get paid for the work they're doing. And if you are doing that entertainment work, as long as the camera is on, you are working. So I think it's a really good thing that that change has been made. You could maybe argue that it definitely should have been there earlier, especially considering that WWE is, as far as we know, not paying for travel still. Yeah, so a lot of interesting things there, but definitely some positives. But look, I think it's time to talk about the granddaddy of the immortals, the show of shows, WrestleMania. Called the granddaddy of the immortals. There you go.
I know, you're just mixing metaphors now.
You know, it's the showcase of them all. WrestleMania Night 1 Saturday opened up with a SmackDown Tag Team title match that ended in a way that nobody wants to see. Shinsuke Nakamura and Rick Boogs losing to the Usos. We aren't quite sure if that was the planned ending, but Boogs definitely suffered an injury during the match that meant he could not continue. Was walked out by health personnel. So definitely, you know, a shout out to Boogs for having his first WrestleMania match end in that way is not good at all.
Yeah, there was a spot there where he had, where he had one of the Usos in a fireman's carry. The other Uso jumped on top and he was supposed to lift both of them up and then do something with it. As he went to lift both of them up, he tore his quad off his meniscus.
His quad and his patella.
Yes, there you go, quad and patella. So obviously they called a quick end to that match. That's why it ended so very abruptly.
Suddenly.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a real shame. It's a shame for the Usos. It's a shame for Shinsuke. A big shame for Boogs. Like, you can say what you want about the character, but, like, poor dude. That's your first WrestleMania, you're in a title match, and you blow a quad. It's not something that happened every day.
The reason Boogs is on WrestleMania is because he gives it his absolute all. That original Boogenhagen, you know, showing where he was just enhancement talent, he gave it his absolute all, put everything he had into a character, and that's what got him signed. Mm-hmm. You know, so this is a guy who clearly cares about what he's doing, and it's a real shame to see that kind of thing happen.
Yeah.
Moving on from there, Drew McIntyre defeated Happy Corbin. A couple of aspects in this match. Number one, Corbin hit the end of days on Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre becomes the first person in WWE history to kick out of the end of days. And also after the match, Drew McIntyre attempted to murder a man by swinging his sword at Riddick Moss.
I will say it tells you how tight those ropes are just for the sound it made.
Yeah.
When he went through
them. So Moss was on the apron. McIntyre got the sword, did a big swing down. Moss moves out of the way. Top two ropes get cut with the sword. Some very impressive theatricality there. I do think it's interesting that Drew McIntyre is theoretically a good guy and attempted to kill a man with a sword live on television.
Yeah, but to be fair, who hasn't wanted to try and kill Madcap Moss at some point?
That's a good point. Yeah. I would also want to cut Madcap Moss with a sword.
That's also a stunt that probably couldn't have been done in any other Fed, because I don't know of any other Fed. Like big Fed, like your Ring of Honors, your AEWs, your ring, your all of the impacts, all of that. They don't use real ropes, whereas they use the cable covered in
cable with a wrap. Yeah,
yeah. Whereas WWE still use like real ring ropes, and it is very different to just your normal the cable, because I've worked with both, because I think AWA had the ropes, whereas everywhere else I've known has the cables, and it is very different, but you could just tell how tight they are wound up just from the noise it made when he cut through it. It was very, you know what I mean? I don't know if the plan was to go through all three, but he did a good job with the two.
He did well. It also shows the incredible people in WWE who don't get enough credit when we talk about production. That means that the ring crew had to be ready to take off ropes that got cut, put on an entire new set of ropes in the time it took to play some replays and advertise for the next match to be on, because there was no downtime. And that goes to show, you know, we talk about how good the video package editors are in WWE. That ring crew did an incredible job there, getting those ropes ready on a big show.
But also they didn't have them right. If you watch the match after, and if you want to go back again and watch it, you can tell that bottom rope is different to the top two. It was just out. Yeah. For me, it threw me off because, like, my mind's always, like, being stupid and analytic. And I could see that I was out. And I was like, what is wrong with that bottom rope? And, like, turnbuckle was off. And, like, they really had to hustle to get everything done.
Oh, but, like, obviously they would have huge show. You don't have much time. So, like, you know, that's interesting. But I do want to talk about the end of Days Kick Out quickly because, I mean, first of all, it's a shock that of any finisher to have never been kicked out of. And this is, you know, a fact I've known for a little while, but really Corbin is the one who has the totally protected finisher. That seems pretty wild, but maybe it's
because he's like,
never had a high profile match enough to have someone kick out of it.
It's End of Days, One Winged Angel. I mean, they're very similar. They're very
six
similar.
Of one, half a dozen of the other.
Oh, very much so.
I really like the End of Days. I think it's a really cool finisher. You know, just giving yourself a rock bottom. Great. But yeah, I think that that's very, you know, shows that even if Drew is not currently in the title picture, even if he's doing this Happy Corbin Madcap Moss feud for several months, that he is still seen as someone, you know, worth a big moment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. Now, I want you to talk about this next match for a bit, Todd. Rey and Dominic Mysterio versus The Miz and Logan Paul, with Miz and Logan Paul coming out on top. Tell us your thoughts.
Logan Paul was very impressive for someone who was a complete. And I even tweeted before. I don't know why, but I've seen some training footage of him and just thought, I've got a feeling he's going to be not very bad at this. And he wasn't. He was pretty good. One thing I do love is that Rey and Dominic came out wearing the Los Ringos Locos type gear, like a tribute to Eddie and Art Barr, which I really loved. For those of you that are really into wrestling would know what I'm talking about with that. But that's like they came out wearing like gear that was very similar to those two. I thought
Logan, representing his real dad.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he kind of starts to look like him now. He's got the mullet. I thought Logan was really good. At some points, it looked like he was carrying Miz, which was sort of weird to see. And then like Miz turned into the biggest babyface at the end when he turned on Logan Paul.
Yeah, I think it definitely goes to show that Logan Paul knows what a heel is and knows that that's got to be him. Is if you are going to, so Logan Paul and The Miz win the match, Miz raises Logan Paul's hand and then turns around and puts Paul in the skull crushing finale, hits him with it and walks out. If The Miz is less of a heel than you are, that says something. Logan Paul knows that people want to boo him and is making the most of it. He walked out with the Pokemon card around his neck. So here we go. This is just, I'm sorry to take this moment. The Pikachu Illustrator is not the most expensive Pokemon card in the world. He overpaid for it massively. It doesn't have anything on the value of Shadowless Charizard. It is, if I bought a basketball jersey off you, Todd, for $1 billion, that doesn't make the basketball jersey worth $1 billion. It just means I paid too much for it. That doesn't make it the most expensive basketball jersey in the world.
Well, that's
what he did with this card.
It does, because you add the value to it by spending the money on it, I guess. By way of, because then he could send it on going, well, I paid X amount for it, so now that's what it's worth. It's only worth what someone's willing to pay for.
Yep, and no one else on earth would be willing to pay that much for that card. It's ridiculous. Sorry, I know that this is exactly what he wants. He's playing the heel, but
Right. All of that Pokemon stuff you did, you just said then, in my mind, I'm straight away going, this must be what it's like when I'm telling my wife about a wrestling angle.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You're going to get me started on Pokemon. I got my league battle deck sitting right there. I can tell you all about how Logan Paul is garbage for the Pokemon card community.
See, in my mind, it was just Milhouse going around on that.
Yeah.
That's all that was going on.
The little monkey on the tricycle. All right. Anyway, so yeah, look, and again, Logan Paul was really, really impressive physically in the match, hitting the Three Amigos, going up top and doing the shimmy before landing a frog splash. he's got the heel act down.
But did everything like pretty crisply too.
Those leapfrogs that he were doing was just magic. I thought he was really great. Moving on, spoiler alert, my favorite match of the entire two-night event, Bianca Belair defeating Becky Lynch to become the new Raw Women's Champion. This also felt like the most WrestleMania entrances that we had all weekend. Becky Lynch showing up with the in the car with the guards and then an entire marching band coming out to play Bianca in. The match was, it felt short. This was not a super long title match, but it felt like it had an arc. You know, Belair taking a manhandle slam on the ring stairs. I am blown away by how quick and explosive Belair is when she goes into those finishing combos. The way the crowd immediately got to their feet when Belair got Lynch on her shoulders to do the KOD. You can tell everyone was invested. I thought this was a cracking match.
Yeah. I mean, if you would be, you'd be mistaken. I mean, if you thought that maybe, I don't know, it was almost like WWE did long-term storytelling there.
Weird.
It's just, especially, I mean, they started the match with her hitting the manhandles and going for that pin again.
Yeah.
And everybody bought that. Everybody thought that was going to be the end of the match again. You could tell in that crowd. They were just, they had them from the very get-go and they didn't let them up. It was a really, really good match. Even after it, I said, I don't know who's going to follow this, but it's going to have to be pretty fucking good because that was a great match.
It was an absolutely excellent match. And this is the bit that I just got the numbers up and this blew me away. It was the third longest match across both nights. It was one of the longest matches on the show.
How long was it?
19 minutes, 10 seconds.
Okay.
Which, like, not a marathon of a match, but flew by. I thought it was a brilliant match. So it was immediately followed by the second longest match of the weekend. So let's jump into that one. Seth freaking Rollins shows up ready for his mystery opponent, who is, of course, Cody Rhodes, coming out with the American Nightmare presentation, coming up on the Cody Vader, you know, the presentation we're used to seeing for Cody. And they go 21 minutes and 40 seconds before Cody Rhodes wins after hitting two crossroads, a bionic elbow, and then a third crossroads. What was your opinion, Todd?
For one brief moment there, I thought, oh, fuck, I'm right. It's going to be The Undertaker. When all the lights went out, I went, oh, fuck. Like, it was a little bit, it was just like a, oh, no. Yep. It's one of those things where I didn't want to be right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was great. Like, the one thing that you can always say about Cody is he knows how to tell stories in the ring. He knows how to structure a match. The same as Seth. So you put those two elements together and you're always going to have a good match. And I mean, I popped for those, the dusty fist with the elbow at the end before he hit the thing. It was great. I thought it was so good. It was so well done. And just the fact that they kept the American Nightmare and they kept his presentation the exact same as what has been is exactly what they should have done. If they'd have put him in anything else or made him bloody Stardust or anything like that, then the crowd would have shit on it. They did exactly what they were supposed they should have done.
Well, legally, that is all Cody Rhodes stuff. It's not owned by AEW or anywhere else. Like, that's his intellectual property. So it means that he doesn't have to worry about if I leave WWE again, then I can't be Cody Rhodes. No, he's got that covered. He's got the American Nightmare. He's got that god-awful tattoo that I just... It's so bad. And you get that beautiful, crisp WrestleMania HD, and it is enormous. I can't, anyway. So Cody's back. Cody's back where, you know, arguably where he belongs, I think.
It was definitely, and it was one of the matches of the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, again, second longest match of the weekend on 21 minutes, 40 seconds. So not a short match, but kept engagement the whole time, had, you know, interesting spots, good work on the outside. Yeah, like not much more you can ask. After that, we got a singles match for the SmackDown Women's Championship between Charlotte Flair and Ronda Rousey. And I was far less impressed with this. You know, I've talked before about how much I don't enjoy Ronda Rousey's work. I think I'm probably biased because I don't like her very much as a person. But you add in what I think is there's a couple of things she does really well in the ring, and I know that she's believable because she's got the UFC pedigree and whatever. It doesn't do it for me. Seeing her constantly adjust her clothes because they don't fit properly really frustrates me. I don't know if you've ever noticed it in a match, but now anytime you watch a match, you almost stop noticing. She cannot stop adjusting her gear. Charlotte, you know, is fine. She knows how to do these big matches well. There was a major wardrobe malfunction where her entire tit was out, which led to WWE blacking out some closing portions of the match.
Is that what that was?
There was a moment where the figure eight got locked in, Charlotte locking in the figure eight on Rousey, something that's never been or very rarely been escaped. And then the network just goes black because Charlotte's whole boob was out.
Jeez.
So that's what that was.
Gee, I didn't see. There you go. I didn't even know that. Yeah. Charlotte tried as hard as she could to get a really good match out, and just she had issues with it. Like, I noticed that any time that Ronda's about to run into something, she runs in at half speed. Or she slows up just before she gets the opponent. And I mean, that's just all a part of just not committing and being green still and that sort of thing. But to me, it was just like, I was watching it and I think I nearly sent it as a tweet. It was nearly like, Charlotte's trying really hard to get a good match out of this. That's the best way I could describe it. Charlotte tried really hard to get a good match out of this.
Yeah, definitely. You can see. Yeah, I mean, it definitely wasn't the worst match on the card, but for what it was, it should have been a lot better. I would be much more excited to see, you know, more matchups with. There's plenty of women who we'll talk about on night two who maybe could have been in that spot and put on a better show than Rousey.
But the problem is they don't have that name. That's the problem. Unfortunately.
It's unfortunate that, look, admittedly, Ronda is a draw, but it's a real shame when your draw is not the person who puts on the best match.
Yeah, that's exactly really right.
Frustrating. But speaking of a draw, the main event of the night is a segment, the KO show. Kevin Owens comes down and before introducing his guest, Stone Cold Steve Austin, just continues to rail on the state of Texas, just absolutely, you know, getting in shots on, as I like to call it, the one star state. But he decides he's going to keep talking before introducing his guest. When the glass breaks and Stone Cold comes out, Kevin Owens admits that he lied to Stone Cold. He didn't just want to talk. He wanted a no holds barred match. Referee comes down and it is on. Kevin Owens and Stone Cold wrestle for 13 minutes, no holds barred, going through the crowd. There's suplexes on the concrete on the outside and on the stage. You know, they're getting slamming each other's faces into the ATV that Austin rode in. And eventually Austin hits the stunner, gets the pin. There's not a lot more you could ask for.
No, it was perfect. There's
one more thing I could ask for, would be a Luthez press, but I understand that his knees are not what they used to be, so I'm not going to complain about that. Look, this it was just fun. It was so much fun, and the beer flowed at the end. I thought it was just
enjoyable. Well, the beer flowed all through the match. He drank like 8 beers during that match. He was drinking
the whole time. Just throw me another one. Glug, glug, glug.
It was funny because, like, as he came out, I was on a text chain with a couple of people, and one of us is like, he's got his knee braces on. That's a good sign. Another one's just like, oh, he's taped up his wrist. Kevin's got his wrist taped too. There's going to be a fight. That whole deal. Yeah. But yeah. I think I can't remember who it was, that there was something I was watching about it, and there was like thought of, like during the day and even leading up to like during the interview, that they didn't quite know, like even Austin didn't know what he was going to do on that night. If he wasn't feeling good, then it would have just been like a kick stunner go home sort of thing. But Austin was feeling great because he took that suplex.
He was looking great.
He took the suplex on a concrete floor. Like, there's a perfectly good ring in there, and you took it on the concrete floor.
Yep.
And I must admit, I popped hard when Owens was trying to ride the trike and couldn't get it going. The quad, sorry, couldn't get it going. And then, like, Austin comes up, hits him from behind, jumps on the trike, and basically doubles him up the top so he could beat him up on the top of the ramp as well. Just chef's kiss. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. It was exactly what it should have been.
And the great bit about that is you also get Owens looking incompetent because he can't start the quad. You know what I mean? So, like, he's just filling the heel role perfectly there, you know, getting everyone to want to see Stone Cold kick his ass, which it didn't take much, but Kevin nailed it. It was so much fun. A great way to kick off, close out night one of WrestleMania.
And you look at that, and I think I even tweeted it, like, if he could work two of the big three a year, Austin, they would run out of print for the tickets to sell tickets for those, because of just that performance alone tells you that he can still do something that people love and people get behind. Like, his promo, live promos before it were just great. He just, like, he knows how to do this shit. He knows how to connect with people. Like, he lost nothing when it came to that. Even the match lost nothing when it really came to, like, knowing exactly what he can and can't do and managing that. And, like, full credit to Kevin Owens, because he's the guy that worked with him to make him look as good as what he could have looked. And that the both of them did that, and they did a great job of it. But you can't tell me that he couldn't have matches with other people on that roster.
Oh, God.
And it'd still be the same sort of deal. Because, yeah, that, if anything, I was just like, well, you could get more out of him easily.
Look, he did say in the pre-match promo that he had his first match in Austin, and this way he could have his, or in Dallas, sorry, and this way he could have his last match in Dallas. Which, you know, makes me think that to him he intended this to be a one and done.
Yeah.
But with how good the performance was, I mean, if you're Vince, you've got to be saying,
how much money do you want? How much money do you want, bro?
You know, 5 minutes at SummerSlam, Steve. Come on, let's do it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's night one of WrestleMania, and we have got another full night of WrestleMania, as well as Ring of Honor to still cover. So, you know what? If you want to see more of what we're putting out, there's places you can do that. You can follow us on Facebook at Wrestle Radio Australia. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Wrestle Radio AU. You can subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss us. But while you're doing that, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
This is the Bro Day Pod. I feel like a crocodile has like the bite force and the rip and tear, but I feel like a shark too much teeth, man. Way too many teeth. Too much teeth. Yeah. Too many teeth. Like, just bite, just tear flesh out of it. If it's a great white as well, I feel like a shark's got it.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know.
If I'm in there, I could choke out a
shark. Oh my God. What is this?
You turn into
is that all this podcast is? This podcast is just to prove, just for you to convince the world that you can fight every animal. Oh, I'm so heated now.
Shut up. It's a triple threat.
Who's taking the pin? If it's a triple threat?
I'll be the crocodile first.
And it's elimination. It's an elimination. You're taking them both out. Nah, bro. This came out of nowhere. It came out of nowhere. Dead set. At any point, all you want to do is prove you can fight animals. Go to the next one. Go to the next one. Go to the next one.
Okay.
Follow Bro Day No Plan B podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Making Chicken Salad, where we are discussing night two of WrestleMania now, which opened with Triple H coming out and introducing the show before leaving his boots in the ring, officially retiring from in-ring competition. Now, we talked about this already, you know, said farewell to Triple H. I'll talk later about how I think the legacy of Triple H lived on this night of WrestleMania. But, you know, awesome to see him come out and open the show before we get the first match of night two, a Raw Tag Team title triple threat tag match between RK-Bro, Alpha Academy, and the Street Profits, where RK-Bro retained. This one was fun. We got a little bit of a thing afterwards we'll talk about with Gable Stevenson, but I felt that this match was exactly what it needed to be. Stevenson?
Yeah, there's no N.
I've been saying an N the whole time. No, there's Why hasn't anyone N. told me?
Well, because you're not supposed to say the N-word, right?
Oh, Todd. Anyway, I think clearly...
Wow, that was so Bobby Gorilla then. Will you stop?
RK-Bro, I think they clearly want them to be the face of this tag division. Street Profits massively impress me every time. Alpha Academy, you know, are so solid and capable at doing what they do. This felt like a great opener. Any difference of opinion there, Todd?
No, not at all. Loved it. That was it, the springboard cutter that Matt Riddle put on the end. Like, way to try and take bloody Randy Sunday, you bastard.
Oh, yeah, because Randy's never done a springboard cutter. That was huge. That was awesome. In saying that, I don't know. I think it was Chad Gable that it was done on. Don't know who Chad Gable was trying to jump on at the time, but
yeah, I know. That's sometimes with some of those ones that he does, he's like, what were you aiming for?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it.
At least the moonsault one that they did a couple of weeks before on Raw, that was really good. But yeah.
So after the match, Street Profits bring out red cups and offer a drink to RK-Bro. Before they do, they notice Gable Stevenson in the crowd, invite him in, pour a drink for him. But Chad Gable comes in and smacks it out of his hand, and Gable gets a huge suplex for his troubles. My feeling on Gable here, Gable Stevenson, is that he did not look comfortable performing in front of the crowd. The suplex was exactly what it needed to be, but he had too much energy to be like cool about it, but it wasn't enough energy to look like he was bragging about it, and he looked awkward.
Well, it was also the first time he'd ever done anything like that. So it's not like he's been training for the NCAAs. He literally just retired from the NCAAs a month ago. So, I mean, let me cut the guy a bit of a break. One thing I did love is that when he knocked the thing out of his hand, just the way that RK-Bro and the Street Profits sort of just like backed out of the ring, sort of like, oh, shit. That bit was so perfect for me. It was just like, they're like, oh, you don't know what you've just done.
I'm going to give a very quick trigger warning here related to sexual assault. So just skip forward 30 seconds. I won't talk about it long. It's worth noting Gable Stevenson has been accused of some really horrible sexual assault stuff at a college party that, you know, through some loopholes, there were really no consequences for. So I felt like it was maybe not the best idea to have him do a segment involving drinking from red cups to be his first thing on WWE TV. I thought that is maybe not the way to do that, because some people in the crowd are going to make that connection, because, you know, I did, but I don't want to dwell on that too much because...
Yeah. I understand, but I also think you may be drawing a very long bow.
Maybe, but the point is that I saw it and it made me think of that, but I, in fairness, I'm also the kind of person who's going to be thinking of that anyway. So we'll move on from that on to, oh boy. Okay. Bobby Lashley and Omos had a match. Bobby Lashley won. It could have been a lot worse.
You know what? And this is going to go against what everyone's going to say. I think Omos actually has a little bit of potential there. There is some potential there with that guy, because when he moves, he doesn't move like his knees don't work.
Like a giant.
He doesn't move like Kali or Giant Gonzalez, or he actually
or even nimble. Big Show.
No, when he moved quick, he looked nimble. It's just, I think that they're not making him move very quick because that's not what he's supposed to. They want him to be the lumbering giant where he doesn't have to be that. Like, you saw some of those moves, and one of them took me aback because he moved real quick. I went, holy, that looked really fluid. But it's just like, it's still green as hell. It needs a lot of work,
needs a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah, could have been a lot worse. I thought, you know, Lashley looked really good. And I think it's the right thing. You know, we'll talk about it more on the next show, but it sounds like Omos now has a mouthpiece, which I think is a good move.
Mm.
And it also looks like Bobby Lashley's getting set up for quite a big face run at this point.
Yes.
So, you know, obviously he never lost the title. Or, you know, someone else took the title from him unfairly, he can claim. So we'll see more there. Then a match that I expected to hate that was honestly one of my favorite Mania matches ever, because it was exactly what it needed to be. Johnny Knoxville defeated Sami Zayn using a giant mousetrap to pin him. Sami Zayn, I saw someone tweet, and I can't remember who it was, but credit to whoever it was, says that they're not sure what their favorite Sami Zayn match was, either that Shakespearean arc about, like, betrayal and redemption, or the one where he got hit in the nuts with a mechanical kicking machine. This match was exactly what you want when you have jackass people in a WrestleMania match. There was a giant hand that slapped Sami Zayn. There was.
A cameo with Mark Henry and Mae Young's son, which is great to see.
Mark Henry's son, you know, getting the WrestleMania spot he deserves. You know, Wee Man did a slam. Party Boy was there shaking his junk.
In 5 seconds, Wee Man did more than what Swoggle had done in God knows how long to make him look like a wrestler. I want to see Swoggle and Wee Man because I think Wee Man would be better than him.
Wee Man was really good. This match was, you know, there was a table with mouse traps glued to it. You know, it was, we weren't expecting this match to be a technical marvel, and it wasn't. It was exactly what it needed to be for this point in the show. And I thought that it was, for what it was great.
Yes, it was amazing. Not every match has to be Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair at Wrestle Raw. Like, not every match has to be like that. There's always something, you have to have something to break it up. And that definitely broke it up. It was, especially when who you've got in there. Like, you had Party Boy jump in and do that stupid spot. And it was exactly what it was, because the guy's not a trained wrestler and he hadn't been really trained. Not only that, he's like in his 50s anyway. So,
especially when he's a celebrity on a show that also has Pat McAfee and, Logan Paul wrestling, who, you know, if he's going to try and wrestle, he's going to be really unfairly compared to two guys who killed it.
Yeah.
So I think, I thought this was awesome. We talked about it before we started recording. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens just absolutely nailing their roles, owning the WrestleMania, just going in there and doing exactly what is needed to get someone else over.
Yeah. For the people that said that Sammy and Kevin Owens made the biggest mistakes of their career by re-signing contracts, I mean, Kevin just headlined a WrestleMania with Steve Austin. And Sammy, even though it wasn't a classic match, it's a classic match. And people are going to be talking about that. It's
going to go down in history as one of the great WrestleMania matches.
Whereas if they'd have gone to the other joint, who knows what they would have been doing. They might have been on Rampage that night.
They would have been in that big 7-man ladder match or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, after that, we had a fatal 4-way tag team match for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championships. Defending their titles were Carmella and Queen Zelina against Natalya and Shayna Baszler, Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan, and the winners of the match, Sasha Banks and Naomi, the newly christened Boss and Glow Connection or whatever they're called. I think Banks and Naomi are a great pick to be women's tag team champions.
Shout out to them for taking my boy's finishing move, the big papa. Well done, guys.
Yep.
You're welcome to it. Using in good health. It's funny because my texting went off straight away when they hit that finish. going, that's our move. That's our move. Well, not anymore, boys. Yep, sorry about that.
You're stealing women's wrestlers' moves now, apparently. Tut, tut, tut. Yeah, look, again, I said that there's a lot of people in this match that I think I would have loved to have seen in different spots. I think Shayna Baszler is amazing. I think Liv Morgan's really proved herself over the last 6 months to a year. Sasha and Naomi are both proven commodities. Rhea was there too. That's a joke. That's just to get at you, Todd. Rhea Ripley is, I think next year, the night one main event has to be Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair. I think it has to be.
Yeah, you'd like to hope so. Because it's probably about that time where if they don't do it, they'll miss the boat on.
And they've been building those two as the two coming up at the same time who keep seeing each other. They were the final two at the Rumble, and then there was Elimination Chamber stuff with them. And it seems like they're on a big time collision course. And it seems like they're the future.
Mm.
But the match was good. It was your typical fatal four-way tag team chaos. Nothing special, but good.
Yeah.
Now, for a match I think a little bit less of. I talked about the legacy of Triple H at WrestleMania. And when I think of Triple H at WrestleMania, I think of matches that go way too long for no reason that should have been better. Edge and AJ Styles had the longest match at this year's WrestleMania, clocking in at 24 minutes. That felt more like 48 minutes, going that classic old WrestleMania slow plotting style that, man, with Edge and AJ Styles, you would really think it would be more exciting. And it just wasn't. It never got there. It never felt like it had the energy it should. The end came when AJ was on the apron about to hit a phenomenal forearm, and then Damian Priest is there. And so AJ looks at Damian Priest for a second and then goes to hit the phenomenal forearm anyway and gets speared. And that's the end of the match. And now Damian Priest is aligned with Edge. I don't know what more to say. This match should have been really good. I would have put money on it being one of the best three matches of the show. And it,
yeah, I think we talked about that in the preview that we thought it was going to be. It was one of those ones that it didn't look like it got out of first gear for a long time. And I don't know if that's more Edge really trying to commit to being this heel character now or what the story was, but that's the only thing I could really chalk it up to is that maybe he's really trying to go, I don't want to do anything overly exciting because I don't want fans to cheer for me. I'm really trying to push being the heel.
The thing for me with this match was that in the first 5 minutes, I was really enjoying it because it felt like the perfect first 5 minutes. And like you said, it just didn't get better after that. It was real like chess matchy. It felt like they all knew what each other's combo lines were gonna be, and so were like, oh, I'm in this move, so now I reverse the next move into this. And it felt like they had really analyzed and thought about each other, and then it just didn't grow in intensity or speed or impact at all. Really, you know, there was a springboard 450 that if any other wrestler did it, you'd go, wow, that was amazing. But it was AJ Styles, so it's what you expect, you know, and maybe.
Which is unfortunate when you think about it.
You know, like that's the thing is that I think if this was two nobodies, we'd be talking about how it was a really shockingly good match. But I think the weight of expectations really got in there. And with two wrestlers who we know can put on barn burners, for it to not get that energy feels really rough.
Hmm. Speaking of which, how good was that the second rope 450 by Bianca Belair the night before?
Oh, my goodness. So quick and out of nowhere. And, I'm trying not to talk too much about the Bianca match because I thought it was superb and I could talk about it all day. After this, I'm going to go watch it again. I thought it was great. So after that was a tag team match. Sheamus and Ridge Holland defeating Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. The big headline from this match is, of course, Butch, who just wants to be in there ripping people's faces off And, you know, like we said it before, if anyone's going to do this Butch thing and make us feel something, it's him, you know, but he just had so much intensity. He wanted to get in there and beat them up. And it felt like Sheamus and Ridge Holland were distracted from the match because they had to hold back Butch.
This was bumped from the first night for time. And it was they must have said, look, we're going to get you on anyway. But it would have been the quickest match on the card. And I know a lot of the detractors out there are saying, well, if you hadn't played so many video packages, you wouldn't have had, you could have given them more time, which is a fair criticism as well. But
1 minute and 40 seconds this match was.
Bullshit. Was it that quick? Holy hell.
1 minute, 40 seconds.
Well, there you go. I love the fact that Kofi and Woods come out wearing Big E gear. That was really cool. Didn't even wear the knee pads. He was like, well, that's a bit of risk with Woods because he's not exactly un-injury prone.
And specifically that gear in the colors from when Big E won the title.
Yeah.
You know, New Day with gear. New Day are one of those groups that they get all of the little things. And gear is something that they are so careful about and they do such a good job of.
One thing, though, I describe Butch, and this is something that only Queensland wrestling fans will get. Queensland wrestlers, like, this is Tim Cade if he had too much pre-workout right before a show.
Yep. I'll... All right, I'll never be able to unsee it. Thanks for that.
if you're ever at the Venom Pro Wrestling show, the Elimination Chamber show, or Elimination Lockdown show they had, where they didn't have enough handcuffs, so they tried using cable ties, and Timmy just kept breaking them and running around the ring, that was Butch.
Oh, that's it. Pete Dunne is a full-time beast. It's absolutely. After this, we had a little duo of matches that I had so much fun with. I don't know why, it's the perfect nostalgia for me. So Pat McAfee had his match against Austin Theory, which, you know, we've seen Pat McAfee work before. He nails it. He won the match after literally jumping from the mat to the top rope in order to hit a superplex. The dude is insanely athletic, and he's clearly having such a good time in there. Again, he had a proper WrestleMania entrance coming out with the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders. Pat really putting on a show here that, for someone who is not a trained wrestler, had an excellent match. And when Austin Theory went to walk out with Vince McMahon in tow, Pat and Vince started jawjacking at each other. Vince took the tie and shirt off to reveal the old black wrestling singlet underneath, got in the ring, summoned a referee, and then we had a second match, Vince McMahon versus Pat McAfee, which Vince won after kicking a football into Pat's ribs.
That was after Austin Theory had attacked him from behind and rammed his nuts there into the goal, the posts and all of that. It wasn't really a match as such, as it was just a thing
that happened.
Everyone's saying, oh, everyone should apologize to Dave Meltzer because they said they were going to have a match and they had a match. And like, that wasn't a match.
No.
Like, wasn't advertised a match. Just like the Stone Cold thing wasn't advertised a match, that was a match because they literally had a match. That thing.
Speaking of Stone Cold.
Yeah. That thing with, you know how old Vince is. When you saw him like pretending to kick the football and he could barely move his legs, they were just like, it's like his knees no longer work, which is amazing because the dude like squatted 1,000 pounds the day before on a video he sent to Pat McAfee.
He's a freak of nature. But Vince wins and then Stone Cold Steve Austin comes out and for old time's sake, we share beers and we hit stunners. Theory gets hit with a stunner. Vince gets hit with a stunner. Pat McAfee gets hit with a stunner. And Steve Austin's brother comes into the ring to share a beer with him.
You really thought he was going to get hit with one too.
I really thought it. Tell you what, his brother looks exactly the same as him. They could be twins. Vince McMahon as everyone I'm sure by now knows, took the worst stunner that has ever been taken.
Well, I mean,
in
he's,
fairness,
he's the like the top five of those anyway are his.
Yeah. The combined age of Stone Cold Steve Austin and Vince McMahon in that stunner, 133. So, like, I'm not going to complain too much about it not being a perfect stunner cell
and,
when they
and
are
Vince
both
is
old
72
men.
Of those.
Yeah, that's exactly. Like, the man is so old. His knees don't work. He's not going to be able to sell a stunner while covered in beer.
Mind like, you, Austin Theory took a great stunner.
It was incredible. He just about went over the ropes with his sell. It was amazing. Also worth noting, Pat McAfee taking a great stunner and then lying on the outside, eyes closed, pouring a beer into his mouth on the ground. You can tell that everyone's having so much fun getting beaten up by Steve.
But could you tell how much fun Steve was having? He did like an airplane run around the ring.
Yeah, it was the best. So, you know, everyone here is having fun. I had fun. Did you have fun with it, Todd?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Like that's when I said, bring him back every second, like two out of the four, big four, bring him back for something. Because, like, the crowd will eat it up every day and twice on Super Bowl, like WrestleMania Sundays. Like, he can just come in, stun a couple of people, get out, and they will love it.
Yep, absolutely. And then the main event, the biggest match in WrestleMania history, apparently, Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar, again, to unify the WWE and Universal Championships. Roman Reigns is your new undisputed WWE champion. This match was basically what all of the other Roman Reigns-Brock Lesnar matches has been. You know, a referee gets knocked out by whoever's the heel, and then there's a low blow, and it is what it is. But
look,
it could have been a lot worse.
Brock sold a lot more than what he's done in any of the other matches. They very much did the whole reversal of roles, where Reigns did play that aggressive heel, which was really good. I thought it was really good, the fact that they did that. They didn't just have Brock shaking everything off and then going back at it. That was good because you got to see a bit of character out of Roman, that sort of deal. Interesting note that Roman actually did pop his shoulder and then pop it back in during that match, right near the end. I found the end though, like the guy that won it probably should have won it, but I was just waiting for If You Smell. I was so waiting. I so thought that was going to happen.
Especially because the show finished like 10 minutes early.
Did it? Well, they could have given
it was
New Day about fucking 8 more minutes.
When the pinfall happened, it was still quarter two. So there was like another 15 minutes that it could have gone. There was 5 minutes of celebrating, then it was over. I was sure The Rock was coming out, but no. And look, I'm not complaining. It was fine. I think it was good. You know? It was what it needed to be. But yeah.
Also though, do you think because that stuff happened just before with Austin and McMahon and all of that sort of stuff sort of made it hard for those guys following that?
Definitely. The crowd was spent, you know, it's a hard thing to follow. And I wonder if maybe that was done on purpose, knowing that this match was going to be just a match, that there wasn't going to be some huge thing happen, but it did need to be the main event because they're unifying the titles, so put something big and exciting on before so the crowd go home happy. Anyway, so that's WrestleMania, and look, I think we've spoken a lot there, but we do also want to cover Supercard of Honor. So let's quickly race through what happened on Zero Hour. First of all, Colt Cabana defeated Blake Christian, AQA defeated Miranda Elise, Gates of Agony beat Shinobi Shadow Squad, Swerve beat Alex Zane, Tully Blanchard's new client was revealed to be Brian Cage, who defeated Ninja Mac very quickly, by the way, and Jay Lethal beat Lee Moriarty with Matt Sydal. Anything you really want to talk about here off the Zero Hour card, Todd?
The whole Cage, Tully Blanchard now having Gates of Agony and Brian Cage with him as sort of like a group. That's Tully Blanchard Enterprises, it's called. I'm sorry because I screwed you over a bit there, mate, because the Zero Hour was just Colt Cabana and AQA against those two matches were just in the Zero Hour. Right. I've accidentally moved where the main card started. So the main card actually started.
And again,
with Swerve,
I just watched it as a 3-hour show, and it's like, yeah. Oh, there it is, you know.
Yeah. They formed. From I'm looking at it, and I'm like, that's not a group that I think fits Tully. It's like,
yeah,
like that fits when Paul you think Ellering. Of Tully. If Paul Ellering was there. Yeah. That's what fits Paul Ellering, not Tully. Tully, I see as wrestlers.
Yeah, those classic big hairy men who are going to put you in a sleeper hold and put you to sleep and out wrestle you. Not, you know, these big beefy guys who are going to put the hurt on you.
If I was to pick a group, an ROH group in particular, that Tully would be like managing, it'd be the Foundation.
Yep.
That type of a group is what I would. Like, I don't really pick being there. The Colt Cabana thing was good because it was a bit of nostalgia for the ROH fans out there. I've said it before, I'm not the biggest fan of Swerve, so it didn't really move me either way. Jay Lethal with the heel Swerve. Turn.
It was a fast match, you know?
Yeah.
It was never going to be anything more than quick guys being quick.
Jay Lethal with the heel turn or the start of the heel turn with Lee Moriarty. Again, I'm not a massive fan of the way that Tony Khan books managers to be babyface managers. I don't think that's, or to just have guys ringside, just to stand ringside. I don't understand why you do that, to be perfectly honest with you. So, and I've said that before, but the Jay Lethal thing was good. Move on to the not main card, but the title matches, I guess.
The title matches, that's right. So first off, we've got a interim women's world title match where Willow Nightingale was defeated by Mercedes Martinez to become the new champion. I've spoken before on this podcast about how I think Mercedes Martinez is great. I spoke on the last show that I think Willow is at the start of being a really good women's wrestler.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Not her best show. And, you know, I said that last time that she's got some distance to go, but I think she will get there. This match did not show how far she has come.
Yeah. Great personality, though. Like, if that was my first time watching her, I would be like, she's a great wrestler until the bell rings.
Yeah.
Because she's got amazing charisma and amazing, like happiness and connection with the crowd and all
her
of that.
Her presence is fantastic.
Yeah. She's just got to work with her actual in-ring work.
Definitely. And then we had what I'm sure will be your match of the weekend, the Ring of Honor World Tag Team title match with the Briscoes losing their belts to FTR. This has been building for a little while. We knew it was going to be a damn tag team match.
Mm. It's very rare I do this. When FTR won that, I literally punched the air. Because I just wanted to see it. I wanted them to win those belts. And because, again, they're my favorite team. They're my favorite act in wrestling at the moment is FTR. I just love everything that they do, the way they go about their business. But, yeah, that was one of those things, like when they won, I was like, and you never do that because, well, me anyway, I never really do that because I'm just super analytical when I watch wrestling. I just, you know, oh, that was good. That was cool. Like, it takes a lot to pop me.
Yeah. And worth noting, FTR have now been NXT Tag Champions, Raw Tag Champions, SmackDown Tag Champions, AAA Tag Champions, AW Tag Champions, Ring of Honor Tag Champions.
Yeah.
Like,
six-time, baby.
They're clearly the best. They're clearly the best team. Obviously, the Briscoes are an established tag team who are great at tag team wrestling. And putting them up against FTR is a no-brainer. What more do you want? What more do you want?
Well, you don't want the Bucks coming in at the end and ruining it, that's for sure.
I thought you might jump in on that one there, Todd. Yeah, Bucks attack the Briscoes afterwards. You know, Bucks doing Buck things.
Do you know what I don't get, right? Is the Bucks slide in and attack the Briscoes to set up a match with FTR.
Yep. Attack FTR if you want a match with FTR.
Thank you.
Seems obvious, but
yes.
You know, anyway, the Ring of Honor World Television title match had Rhett Titus losing the title to Minoru Suzuki. Now, this is something we were talking about before the show. We believe Minoru Suzuki had, what did we say, 6 matches in about 30 hours? and won five of them. And the only one he lost was by judge's decision. Like, that man at that age should not be performing at the level he is. It's freakish.
Mm. Yeah. And Red did a really good job too in this match. Like,
oh yeah.
It was good. I liked the match. It was quick though, 6 minutes. It was quick.
Yeah. Let's talk about an outcome that we weren't expecting. The Ring of Honor pure title match, Josh Woods defending against Wheeler Yuta, and he did not retain. Wheeler Yuta, the new Ring of Honor pure champion.
Yeah, this is one I didn't like at all. I was not a fan of this at all. I'm a big fan of Josh Woods. I think he's the goods. I really like his work. And when I think Wheeler Yuta, I think I even said this on the preview show we talked about, I don't see him as a pure wrestler. Now, I know they've done this thing just to further the whole storyline with Punk and William Regal. Moxley, William Regal, and Danielson. And then they kept talking that, oh, William Regal's in the building tonight. You never saw him. So why bring it up? Do you know what I mean? That never came about. I just wasn't a fan of it. I'm not a fan of Wheeler Yuta to start with. I'm more of a fan of Josh Woods. So that's where my bias is already, like.
I'm more of a fan of Wheeler Yuta than I am of Josh Woods. And I also think this was the wrong decision. I really like Yuta. You know, I've talked about liking him since Wrestle Dojo. But yeah, it doesn't feel right.
He's not a pure wrestler. He's not. Like, he looked out of his depth when he was in there against
If he'd won the TV title match, I would be massively behind it.
Yeah.
He doesn't feel like he should be the pure champion.
No, that's the thing. Pure champions are shooters generally, or guys with MMA backgrounds and stuff of that nature. Well, that's what Josh Woods is. Josh Woods has an MMA background, and that's why he looks like a shoot. He looks like a MMA fighter, whereas like Wheeler Yuta just looks like a wrestler. Do you know what I mean?
How would you feel if they swapped those two new champions and Yuta had beaten Rhett Titus for the TV title and Suzuki had beaten Woods for the pure title?
I would have been fine with that, to be honest with you. It's Suzuki. He's an MMA. He's had MMA matches. He knows that style. That fits.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Is like, you've got someone on the card who is winning a title, who would fit, and Yuta does fit the title they won.
Yeah. A lot of the criticism coming out of this show was that all the AEW guys went over for titles.
Yeah, and there was not a match where you couldn't say that there was a new champion. If there was a belt on the line, you know, obviously the Ring of Honor world title match is different because you've got two people who can claim to be champions.
Yeah.
So there can't really be a title change there, but every other belt that was on the line changed hands.
Yeah. Yeah. And even with Gresham, he's sort of like, he's had talks with AEW.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Speaking of which, Jonathan Gresham and Bandido in the main event, nice long 25-minute main event, shorter than the tag match, but as I think it probably should have been. That tag match was very hotly anticipated, but Jonathan Gresham beating Bandido to become the undisputed Ring of Honor world champion. I think Gresham was the right call for this one. What do you think, Todd?
Yeah. Same. I completely agree. I don't know that he couldn't have done it because it was the world title, like, unification match, that sort of deal. But if this was me booking it and I didn't really give a shit about that, the tag championships would have been the main event for this match. Because everything else just felt like it was an afterthought after that. Those two teams tore it up the way they did. Because another thing I'll say too, why Chavo? What I had no idea, why was he there? Bandido didn't want him to cheat. When he cheated, Bandido's the one who got him thrown from ringside. So I don't understand what that was about.
I guess
I was in a chat conversation with Welshie. and we were talking about this show during the thing. I was like, all we need now is for Big Swole to come out somewhere. And this is just Tony Khan saying, everyone who said anything wrong to me, here, I'll give you this.
Yeah.
Because you had Brian Cage on the show. Yeah. You had Chavo Guerrero on the show. Everyone who sort of like he's had sort of a half falling out with just got a spot on that show for some reason. There was no reason for Chavo to be there except for the fact that he was a luchador and yep. that was it.
Maybe the thinking behind it is that with Bandido and Gresham, you don't really have a heel. So you want the crowd to take someone's side. You put Chavo with Bandido, even though Bandido is a face, it gives you a reason to rally against Bandido.
Maybe. Yeah, but then why do the spot where Bandido got him thrown out? You know what I mean? If that's the reasoning, and I understand what you're saying, why do that spot at all? You don't do that spot at all. You just have Bandido not realize that that's what's happened,
yeah,
and go along with the match. You don't.
I get. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only justification I could have with that is that you want Bandido to be a face in some other program soon. You know, like you have Bandido versus Suzuki for the TV title or something, and you want Bandido to be the good guy, so you show him throwing out a bad guy, but Chavo's there to make you cheer for great. It doesn't make sense. I'm trying to justify something that doesn't.
Yeah, I was gonna say you keep going, but it doesn't really.
No.
But yeah, that's for me, like, it was a good match because Gresham's one of my favorite in-ring technicians. I just thought that everything after the tag match was sort of like it was like a post show.
Yeah. And also Joe was there.
Oh yeah, Joe was there. I forgot about that too.
Yeah,
there was someone standing behind him at the end going.
Yep.
For those someone on with YouTube,
a lot of money
pointed at exciting.
Yeah. I'm always happy to see more Joe is the my outcome there.
And believe me, you saw more of Joe this time.
Yep. There was more of Joe to see. But yeah, I wish Khan would go away. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I hope we get a really good showing from Joe.
Yeah, well, also at the end there, you had the actual full-on heel turn with Jay Lethal, because Jay came out and challenged Gresham for the title for the next thing. And like during the night too, because they had the thing with him and who was he against during the Lee Moriarty at the end of the match, he attacked. Because he won that match with a lay blow. And excuse me for a second, my chair is just being a shit.
Getting nice and close to the mic there, Todd. But yeah, so we've definitely got, you know, the clear heel for the next Ring of Honor title program.
Yeah, like Sanjay Dutt coming out of nowhere to join him as well. So he's moved back from being a producer sort of back into a more of an on-screen role again. Being that I don't know if he's going to be managing Jay Lethal or if he's just being his friend that's with him. But that's what they were attacking him, and that's when Joe's music hit and Joe came out and ran him off. And there we go. We went home with Joe. Joe apparently cut a promo on that, but I didn't see it because it was after the show, which is...
Yeah, not on the actual program. So.
Which is a bit counterproductive, really. You'd think you'd let him talk.
Yeah.
But anyway.
He's a good talker. But anyway, look, it has been a huge weekend of wrestling. So there's also some stuff that we haven't got to. So if there's anything that you'd like to hear us discuss that happened over this huge WrestleMania weekend, there's plenty of places you can let us know. You can go on over to Facebook at Wrestle Radio Australia and give us a like there. You can head on over to Twitter or Instagram. We're at Wrestle Radio AU there. If you want to at Todd on Twitter, he's at Beast Eastman. If you want to give it to me on Twitter, I'm at Lachlan Albert. And you can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, YouTube, you know, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us, you can hit subscribe. And especially if you're on Apple Podcasts, it makes a huge difference to give us a rating and a review there. Gets us around, gets us in more ears. On top of that, you can find our merch on Redbubble. We've said it before, we'll say it again. We don't make any money off that merch. The money from that goes to Beyond Blue and Gotcha for Life, two amazing charities supporting men's mental health here in Australia. Yeah, like I said, a massive weekend. I am ready to go watch my favorite match of the weekend again. Anything else we need to mention, Todd?
Well, do you want to do chicken shit, chicken salads before we go?
What's if I remember, like, the actual...
It's only the name of the show.
Only the name of the show. Yeah, so let's start with the chicken shit. Get the bad stuff out of the way. What's your complaint here, Todd?
Generally, my complaint today was I'll do the one that I saw today because I'll probably think of another one by Sunday. But it was WWE and Fox, the Twitter handle, put up a photo of Edge and Damian Priest with a thing saying, name this duo. And Brody King quote tweeted it and said, when you order House of Black on Wish.com. Dude, like, shut up. Simple as that. Like, let it go, bro. Like, I don't know why they feel the constant need to take these shots. Where, especially when you're naming a guy like Edge, who, let's face it, has done more than what Aleister Black's done. He's done more than what Brody King's done. Hell, he's done more than Buddy. And I love Buddy. Just shut up. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't get why you do that. You don't have to do that. You can just let things go. But that's just me, I guess. I don't see the point in doing it. I don't see the point in doing it where AEW, it seems to me anyway, AEW workers and AEW fans will take 1,000 shots at WWE guys. And if anything, even WWE Jason takes somewhat of a shot at it, wow, do they blow up. And yeah, I just don't think it was needed. I could never see Edge quote tweeting a photo of the House of Black and going, what happens when you order the brood on wish.com? That's more to the point, I think, is what I mean.
Absolutely. Yeah, fully agree with you there, Todd. My chicken shit for the week is that really easy to note the titles that weren't defended on WrestleMania, the Intercontinental title and the US title, not appearing on the show, held by Finn Balor and Ricochet, two guys who there's no reason to not have them on WrestleMania. No, but specifically, I want to talk about what the hell is going on with Finn Balor, because he becomes the champion, right? And then what? They have him lose the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, and then they have him lose against Austin Theory. Why was he even in that match? Because he's there because Austin Theory needs to beat someone who's not on commentary at the time. Have it be the US champion? I don't understand.
All I can think of is that maybe they're trying to set up a program with the two of those guys. That's the only thing I can think of that you would do that for.
Because again, like, we're recording just after Raw's been on the air and Austin Theory and the Usos beat RK-Bro and Finn Balor. So like, it seems like
and Austin pinned Austin Theory Finn Austin, Balor thing. Austin pinned Finn in that match too. Yeah. So that's what makes me say they're setting up something to do with that. So
I don't like having these titles mean nothing.
No.
It's really frustrating to me.
I'm kind of hoping now that they've amalgamated the two world belts that maybe they might do something like the US title is the main title-ish on Raw, and the Intercontinental title is the main title-ish on SmackDown. And they do that sort of a deal. And then the world champion can
goes for the world champion.
World championship can bounce like they did back in the day with the Undisputed title.
Which I agree, but at the same time, if we've only got one match for the main title, then it seems ridiculous that this two-night WrestleMania that went for 4 hours each night didn't have time for defending these belts that should be really important. Now,
yeah.
I understand that there's things that really need to be on the show, right? Cody's debut back is huge. Stone Cold coming out is big. You know, we talked about how we loved that Johnny Knoxville match, but like Drew McIntyre and Happy Corbin.
How long did that match go for? How long did that match go for?
The McIntyre Corbin match, 8 minutes yeah. 35.
Okay. So that's 8 minutes 35. New Day and that went for 2 minutes. So that's 10 minutes right there. So what would you do? Would you, if you gave 2 5-minute matches to them, would you blow up because they only had 5-minute matches on a Mania?
I mean,
do you know where I'm coming from?
I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, it's like if you've got 8 hours, yeah, how can you not fit it? You know, yeah, we were talking about how there were so many complaints about them playing promos throughout the show. And while I don't necessarily think that they needed to play less promos, you know, night two was packed with recaps of night one.
Yeah.
If you take out those recaps of night one, I reckon you've got enough time for a 7-minute match. Mm. And I'd take
why couldn't you just have them defend one a night on the pre-shows?
Yeah.
I know it's pre-show and it's that, but still, you could have.
I'd probably complain about it being on the pre-show, but being on the pre-show is better than not being on WrestleMania.
Yeah, yeah. I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you. I agree and then I disagree, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know where you could have found the time, because they didn't even have the time for the New Day match on the first night. And on the second night, they gave them bugger all time when they did put them on the show. But also, it's like you want those things to mean something. So if you can't give them a decent amount of time, maybe it's better to not have them on there, just because you're not doing like a 2-minute match with it or a 5-minute match with it or something like that. I stumbled on this thing the other day, and I don't know if it's maybe a dumb theory I have, but I keep watching, like, anytime I watch a Raw and a SmackDown and I see these 2-minute matches, these 3-minute matches, stuff of that nature, it's almost like they're just doing these things because they go, well, if you watch the pay-per-view, you'll actually see a full match. Here's the preview to that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know if that's just me being dumb or like that's what they're doing.
Yeah, but then at the same time, like, they go and do, I know that we always do the here's the Hall of Fame class at WrestleMania. Did we need to do it twice?
Did they do it twice? They did
the Taker came out a second time,
which I don't complain with, to be honest with you, because it's a Taker.
Sure, but my opinion is, if you were in Texas and you wanted to see Taker, you can go to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Right? Or you can go to night one. If you didn't go to either of those events and then you don't see Taker, that is what it is.
It's kind of on you.
Did we need 5 minutes of him coming out to literally stand there, turn around, put his fist up and walk out?
Yes. No.
Great. Good to know we got a difference of opinion there, Todd. Anyway, let's be a bit more positive. What's your chicken salad there, Toddy? I've got a guess.
Yeah, you know what it is. It's them boys against the FTR. It was after that match, I think I tweeted, now, can somebody please tell me how they think old school wrestling doesn't work anymore? Because that's what that match was. And it was amazing. And it's almost universally so been praised as being an amazing match. And all they did was old school style, old school psychology, old school wrestling. It was brilliant. And it just more affirmed to me what I believe nowadays. If guys could get out of their own way and just sell and work out intelligent ways to get into stuff and psychology, they don't have to do these 1,000 moves that nobody sells, which means that nobody really, how do I explain this? It feels like that these guys and girls don't know how to do the psychology. So we'll throw 1,000 things at you, so you don't have a time to digest any of them. But you'll go, oh, I saw a lot of shit, so it must have been a really good match. Whereas you see these guys like the Briscoes and FTR work something and work to get to a hot tag and work to do that. And you have time to digest what's happening, and they're selling moves. So you're like, oh shit, that would have hurt. Look at him. That's the main difference I see between when I watch a premium live event, I'll say the WWE term for it, and an AEW pay-per-view, is that the guys in the WWE sell the moves to the most part. They sell their moves. Whereas the AEWs, they're too busy moving to the next spot to actually let people digest what's happened in the spot before. And that match to me, FTR and Briscoes, was a perfect example of that sort of deal. Whereas, like, if you can sell the moves that the people are doing and you can tell a good story, you don't need to do a 450 off the balcony through three tables.
No.
You just don't.
Yeah. And look, it was, I'm only not having that match as my chicken salad because I know that you did and I want to give something else. Because what more can you ask for? What more? I love tag team wrestling, and that match is, that's tag team wrestling for you. So my chicken salad for the week is going to be Bianca Belair's entrance. You want a WrestleMania moment, right? There's the entrance, and that is the thing that's made me feel like Bianca Belair is truly a superstar and the future, right? Like,
well, that match too. That match was because they told a story. They sold their moves. I feel like I'm a broken record when I do this because, like, people put over all these amazing matches.
But
that
you feel like it's a broken record because simple things work and you shouldn't have to say it all the time. But then when things come up that work, it's because of the same reasons. It's because they're selling and telling a story and working for the moments.
And that's the thing. Like, that match was amazing between the two of them. And she did a 450 off the, but she put it in a spot that made sense.
Yeah.
And
that's a big moment that got built to.
Yeah. And Sasha sold it. She didn't nip up straight after it and then hit a bloody Rana. Do you know what I mean? It's cool that you can do all this stuff, but if nobody actually even pays attention to you doing it, or if they pay attention for a second and it's on a GIF and that's all you're really aiming for, I don't think that's... You're not telling a story. You're not getting a crowd invested. You're getting them going, oh, ooh, but then they forget it.
And like, look, you
think about the stuff we're talking about today. And we're not talking about the amazing stuff Swerve would have done in his match. Or the you know what I mean? We're not talking about, we're talking about silly things that Jackass did. We're talking about, like, the matches that worked, like, Austin and Owens will never be known as a 5-star Tokyo Dome classic, but you'll remember that match.
Oh, yeah.
Or you'll remember certain things in that match because they didn't do a lot, because they didn't have to. It's just, I'm an old grumpy man and I know that and I apologize for it.
But this is the thing as well. It's not like Bianca Belair knows that because she's been wrestling for 35 years, because she's not 35 years old.
No.
Right? There's so much future for her, and her entrance to me felt like the WrestleMania moment that I was waiting for, right? That was the everyone's pumped, hair stands on end, here's the huge entrance. Because even if you look at the main event, Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, they just walked to the ring, right?
Yeah, there was no
and
real...
I know that it's because it's supposed to be, and AJ Styles walked to the ring, and Edge sat on a chair that had some fire around it, and then he walked to the ring, right? It didn't feel like there were these...
Actually, that was a pretty kick-ass entrance.
It was cool. Like, it was a really cool entrance.
It was like the Brood graduated.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like to me.
Throne just rising. Yeah, I thought it was really cool. But, like, I can't think of more of those WrestleMania entrances that happened, because they didn't this year. And it made Bianca and Becky feel huge.
But then you've got to do that. Like, if everyone had a WrestleMania entrance, then they don't stand out. You've got to have maybe only one or two that night.
You can have more than four total across two nights.
Can you, though?
In my opinion. Yeah, absolutely.
I
feel like, it felt like a lot of people showed up and it was another show. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I didn't see the WrestleMania entrances or attires or anything like that. Everyone just kind of came out and did their thing for the most part.
Yeah. I will say night one blew night two away.
Yeah.
Even though there was some good stuff on night two, McAfee and Austin and McMahon. Night one was amazing.
Far better.
And I think night two suffered because of how good night one was.
Yep. Fully agree. So with that, look, I'll do the plugs quickly again because I somehow managed to forget the whole point of the podcast. Make sure you're subscribed, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get the podcast. If it's on Apple Podcasts, review, give us 5 stars. It really helps. At WrestleRadioAU on Twitter and Instagram. WrestleRadio Australia on Facebook. At Lachlan Albert for me on Twitter. At BCSpin for Todd on Twitter. Go to Redbubble. Search WrestleRadio Australia. Proceeds there go to Beyond Blue and Gotcha for Life. Bam. Nailing it. Anything else, Toddy?
Yeah. Just if I sound any different at the moment, it's because my back locked up, so I've had to lean forward. It's not that you're being any more interesting than you are, but you're just.
It's just I know I'm super interesting all the time.
But yeah, that's it. Nothing else really to, because I've got a quiet month when it comes to actually wrestling shows up here. So just relaxing and preparing for the next expedition, which is, I think, May 7th for us.
That's right.
So
with maybe some changes going down, hey? Maybe might be a bit of a bigger show than expected.
Yes, I think we announced
keep an eye on.
It's moved. It's moved. The venue has moved to the Brolga.
Excellent. So if you're in the Queensland area, check out Wide Bay Pro Wrestling. There's some really good stuff going on there, especially with top-tier Todd's boys. So keep your eye out there. But with that, look, I'm just happy to talk wrestling again with you, Todd. So we'll do it again soon to discuss all the goings down from the Raw WrestleMania Fallout show. We'll do that coming up this weekend. So keep your ears peeled and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, that's been Todd Eastman.
We'll reconvene on Sunday because we've had, after WrestleMania Raw and Dynamite this week, we'll have FTR and the Bucks. So we'll see what's going on with all that. And I guess you and I will catch up on Sunday, which means it'll probably drop Monday next week.
Perfect. Well, with that's been Todd Eastman. I've been Lachlan Albert. Have a good one.